crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Mamma Mia, here we go again with this week's House of Rugby. Brought to you by Joe. Not as good this week. Brought to you by Joe. I've got a really good one.
Okay.
But we'll do it another time. Brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. It's a very warm welcome. It's a bit of razzle-dazzle on this week's show, in the form of World Cup winner and all-round women's legend Rachel Burford. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are
slightly
you?
It's a piece. You've got a foot in a boot.
Yeah.
And we saw you bleeding on Saturday from the nose.
Yeah. So from the final, you're going to get a bit battered, aren't you, in those instances? Body, but my nose is slowly going down now.
Not bust or a bit bust?
A bit bust, but not broken.
Black eye?
Still very straight.
But it's not.
No, it is straight. Oh, it is still.
Jesus.
Straight in there.
Got off on the wrong foot already. No, it's very straight.
Thank
You've
you.
Done all right. Not like Tins. He could smell around corners, couldn't he, back
then? He could indeed. And you can see him coming as well when his sort of nose appears 20 minutes before he does.
Very good, sir.
How are you?
I'm all right, actually. You were ill.
You were hurty head last week.
I'm still a bit ill now. You can sort of hear it. I haven't got quite the intonation that I usually have.
I spent 45 minutes with you before we started recording. I haven't heard it at any point.
I might cough and there may be some coughing.
Right.
It was a tragic case of affairs I was dealing with. Very wheezy.
Oh.
So much so they gave me an inhaler, actually, which Chloe was like, you don't need. But I was always like, I do.
Are you allowed to just be given an inhaler if
you can
you're
take,
ill?
You can, if you don't take 16 pumps a day, which is not something that I've ever had to deal with, you can. You're okay.
What are you talking about now?
I thought we were talking
metaphors again.
No. So it's good. Oh, you did very well, Joe. I think Joe was fantastic.
He's good, isn't he?
Rachel's favourite.
He is.
She's so gutted that he's not doing it this week and I'm in.
What was quite funny about it, actually, is that the relationship between Joe and Tins, who hadn't spent a lot of time together, and Tins was definitely a little bit baffled by some of the antics of our dear friend who was sitting in Rachel's seat last week.
Yeah, I could see there was a little bit of confusion on Tins's.
I think they bonded. I think they got to bonding point at the end.
Because Tins wasn't involved when he came in, so I think it's all been kind of third hand. But I thought he was very good. I thought he spoke actually very well about the issue of to end all issues that I won't go into. Needless to say that I'm just getting bombarded with highly enthusiastic...
It's Saturday, his hearing.
Is it? Mm. I'm bombarded with highly enthusiastic religious people. And do you know what I've done subsequently, genuinely now?
Yeah.
So I have bought a copy of the Bible.
Right.
And I have bought a copy of the Quran. And I have started reading both of them.
Have you really?
I swear on my life, I have. I'm also listening to Richard Dawkins' God Delusion in the car to balance things out. But I'm, I have. Generally, I said to Chloe, looked at me like, why are you mad? And I went, I'm not, it's nothing to do with religion, this particular issue. But I'm intrigued by what everyone said. I'm genuinely going to read the Bible from cover to cover. I'm going to read the Quran from cover to cover. Right. And I'm going to listen to the God Delusion. And then I will formulate my opinion. I won't share it with anyone because that's rule number one. Don't ever share your opinion on that subject. But I have.
We'll do a special show on it at some point.
I don't think we should. I don't think we should.
Do come back
it.
For that one.
Yeah, I might see if I can.
Might be injured.
Avoid that one.
We've been quite a lot of. It was quite an interesting hello between the two of you because you thought there was a bit of edge from Rachel, and Rachel thought there was. But we've sort of made friends before we started recording. Just from your point of view, have you met James before or not?
Not properly, have
not
we?
Properly.
We've been acquainted before at England events and things, but not fully.
Right. And you came in with open arms, can't wait to do it. You were a little more...
Yeah. I was.
On edge.
I was convinced that obviously I knew that I'd met Rachel before at some England stuff. We don't actually do enough, or when I was playing with England, doing enough between the two teams, I don't think, but we can come on to that. But then I saw some tweets and I was like, I'm convinced she just doesn't like me. So I fully researched
you're
up.
You've got a dossier in Rachel.
I know everything about her. And I've never researched anything. Yeah.
Was it the fact that Rachel called you Casio on social media that upset you?
Yes.
Would you like to explain that?
Yes.
Oh, where's that come from?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we've suddenly lost top of
our
stuff.
We've just been comparing our hands, haven't we?
Yeah, that's what did me.
Yeah.
I was like...
I mean, I've got a pretty good idea what you mean, but for the dear viewers...
I knew exactly what you mean as well, but... I knew exactly what you mean as well.
Why did you call James Casio?
I just heard that there was a rumour that he wasn't very good with his hands.
Are we talking in a rugby context, or are we talking...
As if you've gone there.
Only in a rugby context.
A sculptor, or...
What, for all those fucking moments that ghost, like me, Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze, RIP.
And your wife.
Oh, and my wife,
yeah. Already. But we're all friends now. We're in a good place.
I did take that note. That was, do you know what, and I completely forgotten why. There was something I was annoyed at with you, and I couldn't remember what it was, and it was that. Oh, and I was thinking, who the hell fed that into her and said that to her? Because it's not even fucking true.
It's probably a queue of people, actually.
There is probably a queue of people. Like, Tins gets onto it all the time.
Is Casio true?
No.
Was it?
No one's expecting. No, can you just explain why you call Casio?
Because it's a watch with no hands. That's why. So I've got no hands. So it was. Yeah. I've had many nicknames through the time, but it was a favourite of Owen Farrell's and I think Chris Ashton and Danny Kerr. I think it's kind of
a northern thing.
Yeah, I think I don't know who started it, because I don't think it was Owen's originally, but he latched onto it like you wouldn't believe.
Quite good from Owen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give him credit for making it up, because you know he was too busy kicking, but it would definitely have been from something like that. So that's what but we know he bonded. I feel.
Just very quickly before we get into it, I just want to reference the fact we don't have Guinness this evening.
Why?
Because Murray is not here, and neither is producer Si.
Right.
Would you like to know where they are?
I would love to know where they are.
Producer Si and Murray have gone to an awards do tonight because House of Rugby is up for an award for, let's say, best podcast of the year.
Right.
That's a little bit like The Passenger. When you arrive at a destination, it's a bit like The Passenger getting off an aeroplane and saying, thank you very much, I've got you to your destination. And the pilot just sits there going, what?
So, hold on a minute.
Does that metaphor work?
Let me just get this very clear. Yeah. In my head, because this is the first I've heard of it, and I don't want to bring it up.
I thought you'd like
two of the biggest battlers in House of Rugby, essentially the bus
life passengers.
So we're essentially the pilots for this unbelievable. Let's put it a cruise liner, because it is a
creative genius.
Yeah.
Input
and the ticket collector and the bloke who runs the gangplank are going up to collect cruise ship of the year award.
Yes,
and they've been nowhere near the main part of it.
Yeah.
Well, how has that happened?
It's a very good question.
We've been nominated for an award, which is, I'm blown absolutely away by remarkable. That. I didn't even know that. And then those two are collecting it.
Yeah.
There's no way we're going
to
win it, are
I'd they, love to hear producer Si's acceptance speech. I'd like Murray also just to walk on in the background with a couple of pints of Guinness, just to like a little flyby.
What's Si going to do? I'm the guy that got shouted at every episode.
I'm the guy that gets regularly abused.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Good luck, producer Si. Let us know how it goes. Murray, too. I hope you have a lovely evening. Courtesy of,
I'm shocked.
Yours truly.
I wonder what Tins would say about that. Imagine it's like when you won the World Cup. Sorry about that.
Yes, very true.
Sorry about that. And the kit man collecting the
lifting
trophy.
Lifting the trophy.
Saying that he's flat out with all the bags and boots.
Yeah, we don't have a kit man though.
Oh no!
Straight into a massive issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, do tell us about why the women's game struggling.
Should we get into that?
Yeah, you don't even have a kit man.
We've got so much to talk to you about, and it's really, really good to have you on the show. We have got a lot to talk about and lots of comparisons and your journey through the game. Should we quickly start with Saturday, first of all?
Yep.
So I did the game and
I know
you're not allowed to say it.
I know.
You were very good to come because you were bloodied and it was a horrible thing to do. Did you need a moment actually before coming over?
Yeah, I did. That's why I was a little bit late to you. Because we had a couple of people leaving. So our physio, who's been with us from the start, that was her last game. And obviously Dick Rose was leaving as well. So it was a bit, I got to a point where I was a little bit like, sorry we didn't give you the send off, and it kind of set me off a little bit, so I was like, I just need a minute before I came running over to you.
You were very good to come and do that. Fair play to Saris, they were damn good.
They were
damn good in that first half, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen them play as well as they did. They were so clinical in that first 40 minutes. Did you get a chance to see the game?
No, I didn't, no.
They just...
James doesn't watch a lot
I was
of
keen
rugby.
On my research. Fucking hell.
He doesn't know a lot about the game.
I only knew you were coming in on Monday. Like, I'm 100% supporting the women's game, but I hate watching the men's game, let alone the women's, so apologise.
They were brilliant in the first half, though.
They were.
Poppy Cleal, almost unplayable. I mean, she was on fire.
Yeah, I think they dominated from the get-go, and the momentum just stayed with them the whole time, and we couldn't work out how to get it back. Every time we had the ball, 2 seconds later, they had it, and it was like, we just couldn't work it out.
Yeah.
And then obviously going in half-time, 27-0 down, you know, the change room was a bit of a tough place to be in.
Yeah.
A lot of people did start to feel a little bit defeated, but really, really impressed that actually we didn't roll over. We came back out. But it was one of those games where, like, everything went wrong for us.
Yeah.
Like, we made two really good line breaks. If we we had one knock on and then Poppy got in the way and it managed to bat one back.
Well, you say back.
Yeah. They didn't knock on all game.
Quite clearly went forwards, really. Yeah. You get away with them when it's your day, don't you?
Yeah. Whereas I didn't get away with mine, did I?
No.
But it was kind of, it was like that type of game where everything didn't stick for us and everything stuck for them. Like, I don't think they knocked the ball on the whole time, even though they were getting, one of the girls was getting tackled and literally had like fingertips still on the ball, but managed to keep hold of it. So it was just kind of one of those days where everything went right for them. But we started to swing that momentum in the second half. And like, if we managed to get one of those tries away, we could have been, that would have taken us to 24-30, 20 minutes of play, game on. But yeah, you've got to give credit to them, and hopefully we'll survive another year and revisit again.
On you go again.
Yeah.
How do you look back on the season as a whole? Because it felt like there was more coverage around the Tyrrell's Premier 15s this year than, I mean, it feels like it is growing and growing and growing and growing as an entity, and in terms of coverage and publicity. And
it certainly is. I think clubs are taking a lot more responsibility this year in terms of trying to develop and drive their women's game and get more women in. You know, you've seen my picture, haven't you, at the Stoop?
I have, in the shop.
Yes.
But also, but that was interesting, that the very fact that, you know, with the England stuff, with the O2 shoot, you know, featuring the girls and the men, or the women and the men, but also the, you know, when you walk into the Stoop, the fact that there's the women's players on display as well as the men, and then obviously you're in on the shot. So I think that's a massively important, because I don't know why it's seen as any different. Anyway, it should be, for me, it's equal billing. If you've got a club with a team, you need to support it. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
I think those foundation are all coming in now, and they're kind of like adding on to Quinn's. That's the last 2 years now we've been on banners, we've been on billboards, we've got our own box where it's all the women's photos up, and it's basically like a women's room. You know, we've obviously tried to do and did succeed in getting the biggest crowd there this year.
Yeah.
So clubs are being more ambitious, and not just Harlequins, but they're kind of leading in the way, which then obviously gives more excitement about the Tyrrells and the games that are coming up. And the fixtures have been closer, but the margins still need to be reduced a bit more. But it's
bit of a gap between. It's a big spread, isn't it? Top of table to bottom of table.
Yeah.
And can you see that closing? Is it a work in progress, the league, at the moment, do you think?
Yeah.
They're talking about changing some of the teams, aren't they?
So the idea of the Tyrrells is that there's like a 3 year, this year there's 3 years where all the teams will be locked in for that time. And then you basically reapply for your position to be in part of it. And you've got to have meet certain standards.
Yeah. Is that like Super League? Is it like the Men's Super League? Do they do that?
I'm not sure.
I think they give out, I could be completely wrong, but I think they give out sort of licenses, essentially. Which is how the Catalan Dragons got in rugby league. You're looking at me blankly. Do you watch Super League?
Nope.
you're a proper passenger this evening, aren't you?
No. I'm listening. We're listening to this podcast wanting to hear what Rachel's got to say, not what I've got to say, unless there's something that I feel passionate about.
Okay, cool.
So I'm listening. But I do think, I don't watch like the NRL, and I do watch a bit of league if highlights are on, but it's the consistency. There isn't a lot of time in the day for all this rugby watching while you're supposed to be doing it. Like if I went to a game, so Saints are playing at home against Worcester this week, I'll be doing like the corporate stuff. You get like farmed out. No, I'm not getting paid. It's not like a cash in hand job.
Jacket
it's like
padding.
No, there's no jacket padding. It's, you know, it's, I literally be going, right, you've got to do this, go and do there, go to the players' village. So, you know, there isn't a lot of time for that. And by the time you finish, you've watched the game, then you're doing analysis, then you're watching the game. There isn't a lot of time for...
Just rent a smile. Do you do much with the Quinn's boys? Do you do more with the Quinn's boys than you do with the England men?
Not so much. I think there's plans that we'll potentially do stuff together.
Yeah.
I mean, Guzzy's come in and done some sessions with us, and he's offered... to help us wherever we need it. Marlo actually came and did a scrum session with a girl.
Ding! Good joke, putting it in.
I know.
Good man.
That's a great innuendo. I don't know why you'd even go there.
I walked straight past it. You had to go back and pick it up.
I was shocked. We're both shocked by that. Open the mouth. A gog, I think is the word. I would come down and do a session, but I've never been asked, so.
Would you like to come down and do a session?
I'll come down and do a session.
Okay, done.
Good, there we are. Sign on the dotted line. How did you get into the game? Let's go way back. Tell me about why rugby.
I don't really think I had a choice originally because my mum played, my dad played and my sister played. So it was kind of like we were just always at the rugby club. And then I just, went from when you were allowed to, from like the age of six, just was allowed to play and never looked back since.
Tell me about your mum because she was playing it. Well, am I right in saying she was playing until she was 45 or something like that?
Yeah, I think it might have been a little bit older. Really? I'm not 100% sure. It might have been around that time, yeah.
And what position? Where did she play? Who was she playing for?
She played a lot of time at nine, but also played flanker and also played hooker.
Right. Is that, that's a career? That's like all good amateur rugby is you start at 12 and you end up in the front row?
Yeah. I never got out of the forwards. No. Shock, I know, with the opening comments. But I was always, I started front row.
Yeah.
Then I went second row and then I ended up back row.
If you could have had the talents to play any position, which shirt would you have picked? Would you really?
Yeah, I love it. If I could be any player...
That's so ironic.
I don't pick up the irony, Alex.
Don't you? No. Scrum half, you know, essentially is there for what they can do with the ball in their hands.
Yeah, but if I was good enough to play there, I would play there, wouldn't I?
Yes. So that's why it's ironic.
Well, what? I mean, you made a job out of presenting and you're barely able to do it.
Still doing it, though.
I'm still playing rugby-ish. I'm just not a nine. Well, because I'm not built to be a nine. But, you know, I know...
That's not Bicker. That's only me and Joe. People got bored of the bickering last week.
Did they? Yeah. Right, I won't bicker. No, but I tell you what, because like Danny Kerr.
Yeah.
I think he's one of my favourite ever nines because he's got...
Really? Have you ever told him that?
I'm telling him now. I think I have. Yeah. I mean, like I said, there's a few players that I looked at because I was one of those kids at school who played would pretend to be people. So you know, when we played...
Who did you pretend to be?
Oh, apart from when I was dressed up trying to be in the SAS, like dressed as army gear all the time, I spent most of my childhood with like camo paint on hiding. So much so that my mum, you know, there's a bit where you're like, I was probably 14 or 13, 14, actually younger, probably, about 12, 13. And I got fully camoed up with a mate of mine.
Yeah.
And we decided that we were going to ambush my mum. So we basically hid in these ditches. And I'd had all these like electric BB guns that looked the bollocks. They were like real.
Yeah.
Had the camo paint on. And my mum came back and it was raining. And me and my mate like jumped out at her. And
with an electric BB gun?
Yeah, well, it didn't shoot her.
Oh, I see.
You know, I'm not that mad. Right. So got like, you know, wound her up. And she freaked out. So much so, grabbed my friend, took the guns, threw them over the fence, drove my friend home.
Oh.
Drove my friend home, made me go up to the door of the house, like, and apologised to the guy, saying, you know, I'm sorry, I was like, very sorry, Mrs. Patterson, but we were shooting my mum with BB guns, and I shouldn't have done it, and I scared her a lot, and it's really inappropriate, and Nick's got to come home, and that's it, and then she drove, and that was it. So I was reduced to that, but when I was pretending to rugby players...
That is a proper sense of humour failure.
Oh yeah, mum was having none of it. But she was terrified. She was like, it was like 7:30 at night. I've been waiting there for like 2 hours. We'd set up a full thing. She was terrified. She honestly thought, it's like, it's happening. But I used to, I tried to pretend to be Jerry Collins. I think Brian O'Driscoll a bit, you know, because I was watching the first Lions tour he went on. Actually, Rob Howley a little bit in his heyday, used Van der Vesteisen. But then, you know, latterly, I obviously said I'd like to be like Israel Folau's. Obviously, subsequently, not anything like him, but his abilities. And Danny Kerr, I thought, a scrum half, I would like to be.
It's a heck of a blend.
Carlos Spencer.
Oh, King Carlos.
Yeah, some of the skills he used to do.
He was outrageous.
Obviously, I couldn't do him, but it was nice to dream.
Who was your hero? Who were the people that you remember watching when you were younger?
I remember Mickey Skinner.
Oh, the mullet.
Yeah, I think that's what probably...
Like, so you end up, did you want to be like a flanker and a... have you always been 12?
No, I started as fullback.
Oh, did you?
When you start going into positions.
Yeah.
I started as fullback and then made my way into centre.
Did you?
Yeah, if it was either 12 or 13.
And Mick the Munch was your hero?
Yeah, he was. I just remember being at Medway Rugby Club and probably would have been Five Nations on.
Mm.
And I just remember seeing him and because the commentators used to always make such a big... hoo-ha about him, didn't they? Because of how he tackled, and then I guess the hair added to it, and
bosh,
yeah. But I didn't actually realise he's a Kent man, which is where I'm from.
Oh, really?
So there was like these nice little connections, and then he was like part of Wooden Spoon, who I'm also part of, and it was like, oh, it's quite a nice little story. From
I have Mick the Munch's VHS I think it was called Mick the Munch.
It was, and it was. Yeah. It was like, bosh, bang, wallop.
Yeah.
He would literally go through videos and just go, bosh. So we had that when we were going to like sevens tournaments and school rugby.
Yeah.
When you went on the bus, they would have that on the VHS. And it would be like, yeah. Not to motivate. So like, say you're going like an hour or 2 hours away to keep all of the boys happy. So we were at, I think it was like prep school or public school, very middle class school. And we were there. We had the videos up and it was literally him going, you know, Mickey Skinner, that tackle.
Whammo!
Yeah, whammo! Bosh! Crash, bang, wallop. What a video. he was doing all that kind of stuff. And,
Did you ever do that in a game?
No.
It's the kind of thing you would have run around doing, actually, in your Wellington school socks.
No, I didn't. But I always wanted to meet him, but I've only met him once before, but I didn't really get a chance to talk to him. But we would run around just going, bosh, every five minutes. So I thought being a rugby player was all about.
I met Mick Skinner once at the Isle of Wight sailing festival. I was working behind the bar, and I gave him another
middle class thing you were doing. Yeah, was that
wearing my crew clothing.
Yeah, was that when you were working at Henley as well, doing catering? Was it?
No, that was a different year. But I gave him a 60 quid round on the house and got caught and lost my job.
Oh,
but I hope he enjoyed the drinks. I don't think he ever said thank you. But
did he not?
Yeah, I hope that doesn't get me into any legal trouble. Perhaps they'll come after me for lost earnings. No, because they sacked me, so it's all dealt with at the time.
Sorry, you've just gone very Partridge. That was at the time, so I think we'll be like, I'm trying to think there's something else about Mickey Skinner I was going to say, but I can't think of it now.
Not repeatable. So you started off at 50. How old were you? You started at 6?
Yep.
What age were you when somebody said to you for the first time, actually, Rachel, you've got the ability to go all the way here? Have you thought about, you know, committing yourself and seeing how far you can go? Do you remember who that person was?
I think I remember when I was probably around 13, because they did like, you do county level, and then there was also these England performance camps that they put on like once a year. And I remember going along to them, and I remember Gary Street, who's actually the Quinns coach, saying then, you know, one day you'll play for England. And I remember him having that conversation with my dad as well.
Do you remember what that felt like?
I don't really think. I think you just kind of go, yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, I certainly did, because I remember my first ever England camp. I say England, it was like an age group training session.
Yeah.
It was at Leamington Spa, and we pulled up, and it's like 3 hours from my house. And I was like, Dad, are you sure I'm meant to be here? So like already then I was kind of like, is this really happening type thing? And he was like, yes, I've read the letter. Like, because that's when, you know, letters would come through. So I remember kind of when I got into that first session, I kind of realised like, wow, this could be something that I could go on and do. But even then, though, I didn't really know anything about the women's team or...
So you turned up fresh-faced, ready to go. Were they welcoming? Because this is sort of an element of the old school in the men's game. You've got to earn your way in.
No,
is that the same?
All kids my age.
Yeah.
So it's just... There's kind of little cliques in certain areas. And
did you know anyone else in the group?
I don't think I did at that point. I think as I went on later, there was some more Medway girls that would get invited to like regional and then into the England camp. But right at the start, there wasn't. And it's quite interesting. So throughout my childhood, two of my very, very best friends now, we didn't talk in like regional, because she was like in this little clique with these... kind of two different worlds, shall we say. And then she got called out to go to a South Africa tour late, and I was on this tour, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe she's coming. And me and my friend Amy Turner was like, oh my God, she's going to be coming along. And it was, her name's Claire Allen. And literally from that moment, we were like inseparable, the three of us.
Really?
So it was quite funny how like we'd always kind of sit on the opposite side of changing rooms, and we'd never used to talk to each other. And she sent me some pictures actually the other day. She did a big clear out. And there's one of us at South East.
Yeah.
And I literally replied saying, that's when you didn't talk to me.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
And now, though.
And now.
I love Claire. Is she still in the police? She was in the police,
isn't
she?
Yeah, she's on sabbatical. But I think she's coming to the end of that now. Because she's finishing up this year with rugby.
Yeah. Yes. She's had a horrible run with injuries, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She did the 2010 World Cup with Sky. Because she was injured at the time, do you remember?
Yeah, ACL like a week before we
That's
flew.
Right. That's brutal.
Yeah.
We were doing the, you know, talk about the Southwest stuff. I mean, obviously, when I tried to do the age group stuff for like England under 16s, under 18s and stuff, that whole process, I don't know how you found it, but it honestly almost put me off rugby for life.
Really?
Yeah, because we went, you'd have to go, you know, it was like, I did counts, I did like local stuff, county stuff, like regional stuff, divisional stuff, to eventually like South West Midlands, London South East and the North or whatever. And then we would go down to Castlecroft. And my first... So I was basically in the South West, but there were some really good number eights, and I was playing number eight there. And they basically... The Midlands were short, and they moved me up to the Midlands as a 14-year-old or 15-year-old little Lord Fauntleroy, posh. My mum would pack my bag, lay my clothes out.
Arrived on my penny farthing.
And, yeah, I was mercilessly...
Who was in that group that you would have gone on with?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you who the big dog at the time there was, Paul Diggin.
Oh, really?
Digger was the fly half. Old Whiskey Face was the fly half at that time, and he was in there, and they could just, you know, they just took one look at me and were like, "Who the hell?
What the...
Yeah, is this guy turned up?" And so I got a lot of stick for being, you know, very similar stick that you get on this show.
Side parting, bow tie, all
yeah,
that kind of
basically
thing.
Yeah. Not far off. You turned up in a full 3-piece suit, and penny loafers on with little.
Love it.
And so that was, yeah, that was an interesting experience. But the whole thing almost put me off, because we used to stay in sort of travel lodges and bizarre little hotels at kind of, you know, 4,000 degrees. Everything was like a psychological battle. So you turn up. I remember they told me when I first turned up, Davey Wilson, you know, the player.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Moose. Moose had been the year before me, and he got into England, so he was on his red jacket bowling around already. And I remember getting to Castle Court, and it was snowing and it was foggy, and then there was just this lone player in a red jacket just hitting a scrum machine in the distance. We all got off the bus, like all wide-eyed kids, and everyone was saying, "Oh, so and so does that, and that's so and so, and that's Davey Wilson over there. That's Davey Wilson." And out of the fog, this lumbering Davey Wilson with his one arm that's never straightens because he broke it as a kid, and he wanted to go out and play with the kids, so he just pulled the plaster off, and then it healed bent. That's right. Why he's got an unbelievable out the back door pass, but he can't straighten his arm. So when he puts his arms out, one's like that. It's a true story. So Davey Wilson's hitting the scrum machine on his own. We're like, "Oh my God." He was like a mystical creature. And so it was all, and I remember they told me a player that used to play, a guy called Ross Broadfoot, that if you put a piece of A4 paper anywhere on the on the pitch, he could kick a ball to it. And he was always walking around with his water bottle, like just like hydrating, even at that age. So there was so much mental stuff, and I wasn't mentally very strong then. So you just get really put off, and everyone's like, "So and so's watching that, and that's a selector." And honestly, and then I came back for 18s, and it was the same situation. And I was like, if I had to do that again, I just almost put me off.
I can remember interviewing you when you were under 18s, and you had a hell of a strut on you.
Yeah, but that's how I walk now.
No, it was a
really
boss.
Yeah, but you know, there's a teacher at school that used to stop me in the corridor. But like, "Mr. Haskell, stop strutting around like you own the place."
Why was the teacher calling you Mr. Haskell?
He's made that up.
Because you own the place.
No, you know, you're dressing down. So, "Mr. Haskell," or Haskell, I mean, Haskell.
Haskell my, Haskell. Back in line.
No, he'd be like, "Oh, well, fine. If you want to take it with a Mr. But," he would be like, "Mr. Haskell," it's more condescending, I think. "Mr. Haskell, stop strutting around like you own the place." It's like, and it generally turns out that's just how I walk.
Right. So, gangster.
Yeah. But I did, sorry to interrupt, because there's one thing I wanted to say. You know something about Mickey Skinner?
Yeah.
I thought of the most embarrassing moment in rugby that's ever happened, and he won't remember it. Dean Richards came to my school. So you talk about people being like heroes. Dean Richards came to my prep school, Papwick, and did a session. And at the end of it, they said, "Have you got any questions?" And I don't know where it came from, but everyone asked a question. I went, put my hand up, and he went, "Yeah, you." And I went, "Is it true that Will Carling's having an affair with Princess Diana?"
You said that.
Yeah, I said that. That was, but I was.
Can we put that to air? Does that go out?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's true, isn't it? It's a matter of public record. I'm not saying he did it, but it's in the paper.
Right.
So it must be true. And honestly, that was the thing. And I subsequently looked back at it. Oh, he just looked at me like I was... Very much like he looks at me now, like I'm a complete dog turd. And Dean, and then obviously walked off, and everyone's like, no more time for questions. And I could see my teacher looking at me, and I was like, of all the things to ask him. But it was because it had been on something on the TV, and I think I was probably more well-informed than I was then. I asked him, "Is it true he's having an affair?" And he literally looked at me. How embarrassing is that?
That was really
bad. Oh, my God. I was, how old are you?
That is...
11? 12?
12? He... Okay.
Imagine Matt Dean Richards, though, thinking that. But so I think now, when I go to schools,
yeah,
and there's always those irritating, overexcited, gobby, difficult kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you all see them. Like, you know, when you do coaching, you'll always see them. And they always come up and say things. They'll try and tackle you. Or they'll say things like, "I don't like you," or "My dad says this." And you think, what a little dick.
Yeah.
I asked Dean Richards, the most famous England rugby player at the time, of all the questions, the moment of science, did I think that Will Carr was having an affair? And I was 12, 11.
What is so funny about that is I'm really struggling as to whether to tell this story or not, but I did something called rugby class, or not, rugby camp, or what it was. We were talking about this earlier on. Simon Cohen, who's the chief exec of Leicester, used to run it. And we had Jeremy Guscott as our star for the day kind of thing, and it did exactly the same thing. All kids gathered round. Would you like to ask Jeremy a question? And you asked Dean Richards about a sex scandal. There's a surprise. I genuinely, this is no word of a lie, my question to Jeremy Guscott was, so this would have been, so I'd have been 13 in 1993. I said to him, when you played Scotland at Murrayfield last year and you won 25-7, the ball came out to you on the blind side. Jeremy, why did you decide to go for a drop goal? Which he kicked. He actually kicked it. And he looked at me and he sort of went, yeah, I just sort of felt like it was on. And that was it. I have always been a rugby Norse. There is nowhere else to go. I'm absolutely stapled to the table.
But that just shows me where my mind was.
And relative, yes. And that's we are who we are. There is no debate about that.
That is the nauseous question.
Yes.
Like some kids ask.
But I'm not running from that. I'm embracing it.
No, but some kids ask weird questions, but that is unparalleled.
Yes.
But the very fact, I bet you had a little stat chart and all this kind of stuff and little books, didn't you, and notes.
Were you a rugby Norse? Were you into it? Did you watch a lot of it growing up?
No, not really. I'd watch the Six Nations because my dad would be at the club on a Saturday, and then so I just would see it on. But that was probably all that I really watched because that was all that was really on, wasn't it? Is there any Premiership?
Yeah, it was sort of grandstand back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, there wasn't stuff on, was it? I remember the first game I ever saw. My dad. I watched Australia, England, 1991. Whatever the
World Cup final, 12-6.
Yeah, that was the very first. So I mean, it's just been hosed. But to be fair, if you imagine, he was massively bullied at school.
Yeah,
100%. Right. So as all the rest of the more sporty, athletic people going out, he would have been. They would have hit him, and he would have been in a classroom, sort of one tear streaked down his face, furiously writing his book. And he was like, "I'll show them." And then later on in life, he's the one interviewing them and doing stuff for Sky. Yeah. And you've.
I was a scorer at cricket.
Of course
in the hut.
You were. I learned to do that.
I did the sandwiches.
I did that. Well, do you know what? I look back at my back catalogue and I think I used to score for the first team of cricket as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
I was actually in the first 11 at my school and we were once all out for 7. It's not a great day at the crease, sad, is it?
That is not a great day at the crease.
I don't pretend to have any of these. Rachel, I want to talk more about your career because we're waffling on garbage.
Sorry.
When you look back, so I did the 2010... World Cup for Sky. Mm-hmm. Do you remember it was out at... It was at Quinn's... It was Guildford, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Guildford and then finals at Stoop.
When you look back at that relative to the event in... Was it 2017? Was it 2 years ago, Belfast, the final?
2017, yeah.
2017. Just give us a sense of what it has been like to be on that journey.
I think 2010 was actually a massive jump from 2006 where I got my first cap and there was... nobody watching. I don't think anybody really knew other than our kind of family. And I could be completely wrong, but that's kind of how it felt.
Yeah.
And then 2010 in our home country, massive support down at Surrey Sports Park. They sold out. I mean, I'm not sure how many were seated.
A couple of thousand.
Because they put a couple of stands in and you could stand around the edges. And then they filled the Stoop for the final.
Yeah.
And then you kind of jump on another 4 years. And in France, which France always do it so well.
Unbelievable.
Playing in France is one of the best places to play. Is it the same with the men? It's just.
I found when I played over there, you just don't kind of underestimate the passion of it. But every town has is steeped in kind of French rugby history, and every club has a story. And it doesn't matter whether they're in the top 14 or whatever. I was blown away by their passion and just how mad they go for it, and how Northampton was the kind of first club. After that, who was kind of a town-based club, who had all the kind of supporters. Like, we get people at Northampton who watch every training session, team run, who live and breathe it. And I wasn't used to that because when I was at WASC, we didn't have that because we moved around all the time. But in France, we had that. There used to be a guy at Stade Francais who used to come and support who had a rat, big rat that lived in his coat. Oh. And a hat, and it would come out of his sleeve and it would be a big white rat. I still don't know what its name was, but... So there was like crazy people, so they're mad for it over there.
Bizarre. But that final in 2014 sort of felt like the moment that, certainly in this part of the world, the game, that it sort of had a fuse that was lit and it really took off. Can you remember sort of the aftermath of it. Can you remember what it was like in the changing room and the following days off the back of winning in 2014?
Yeah, the changing room was just, it was a tiny little box, the changing room. And
it was the Stade Francais Stadium, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was, maybe we had the away changing room, but we should have had, I'm not sure. But it was a really small box, but then it just made us all really close.
Yeah.
And in the lead up, Nick Heath had done a video to get put together from Never Forget, Take That.
Oh, yeah.
Like, of us like popping up and singing onto it. It's quite cringe, but it's really good fun and good memories. And I just remember how we had that blast in, you know, a few drinks flowing, the cup getting moved around and just, it was like pure joy.
Because it was definitely the first time that women's rugby made the front pages of the papers the following day. And actually, I remember coming out to, because I was doing some stuff with O2.
Did you interview Katie in the morning?
Yeah, she was absolutely smashed.
We hadn't gone to bed yet. No. We were just sitting there. I've got a photo of us looking, literally taking, just going ready for Sky.
Yeah, she was absolutely all over the place.
Yeah.
I sort of remember it quite clear. And then I came back on the bus and you were all like singing, everyone, it was a complete shing shong. You'd have loved it, Hask. You'd been right at the front. But
maybe
it was,
you could be our kit man.
Yeah.
Look at your face.
No, he's quite excited. Right,
yeah. That was genuine excitement.
I speak to Annie.
Yeah, but you know what? Problem is, I'll never be employed as a professional kit man because I'll give you the kit.
Yeah,
that's the problem. They don't want. We've done a few
this round before. At the end of the season, they're like, "Oh, we've got loads of these." Like,
no,
I definitely
need
it.
We've already got into that point. But I would be. The thing is, I want to be a team manager, right? Or I'd happily be a kit man. Team manager, I'd fail down because if I was England team manager, I'd put the boys first. So the RFU budget, they'd hate me for that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, right, you can get a taxi there. Yeah, you can do this, you can do that. But
authorize that.
That'd be no problem. I'd be like, right, the team's unbelievably happy we've taken care of it. Yeah, but the budget. So that's why I'd never be allowed that. And also, if you listen to my wife, she genuinely thinks I can't organise anything. So I would, I'd have to get an assistant. So I'd be like front of house, like lads through the meetings, morale, like, you know, all the announcements, admin. But I'd need someone to literally pick up the phone and go, right, we need a coach, because it would get to match day. And they'd be like, where's the coach house? I'd be like, fuck, do you not remember that presentation I did where we had all those?
I've got 17 Ubers on the way. Yeah. We'll get there one by one.
Uber execs, obviously.
Yeah, true that. Hold that thought. You are listening to The House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our friends at Guinness, with me, Alex Payne, alongside James Haskell, and the England World Cup winner, Rachel Burf. I'd love to have you with us. Still to come, we are going to talk a little bit more about the World Cup and where the women's game is right now. We're going to look back on a successful Six Nations for the Red Roses as well. And Hask has hijacked the perfect pool. So God knows where we're going to end up doing that. First, though, here's something else that you might like from Joe.
Cheers, Alex. I'm Chris Lloyd. This is Carl Frampton eating his way slowly towards the middleweight division. We're going to be here every Thursday talking about the big issues in boxing, getting stuck in with special guests, behind-the-scenes interviews, and, of course, snacks as well. Tune in every Thursday, podcast and on YouTube.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris. Don't forget that the final episode of Series 2 of Boys Don't Cry was out yesterday as a podcast and on YouTube, starring the one and only Mr. James Haskell and his lovely wife. Apparently you've got a telling off on the show for liking Instagram posts that you shouldn't have done. Hopefully not in a religious context, but in a...
Yeah, it was an oversight for mine. It's a bit of a minefield.
Have you offered one of those sort of tenuous apologies, which is, I'm so sorry I didn't look at the content, I just liked it.
Is Chloe telling you off?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it was a discussion we were having. It's actually, Russell Kane, I'm a bit of a fanboy of Russell Kane, so...
But he was not very interested in you.
No, not massively, but
you said this the other day. You met it, or Chloe said?
No, No. So when I met Russell, he was great and really nice. But when Chloe did the show, I think she mentioned that I was a fan. He was like, yeah, and just carried on talking to Chloe. I thought you were a bit like, oh, that's nice.
Oh, to have that many fans.
I know, but I did, but unfortunately I didn't. So no, but Chloe was fine. It was just one of those things where you're accidentally scrolling past, and I accidentally on purpose liked a woman in a bikini. And
which woman?
I can't say the name.
Why?
Because it's just not worth
it. So was she following that woman as well? And
yeah,
I'd, like it, or?
I ballsed up because I daren't make out Chloe did anything wrong. It's completely my fault. I had been on a date with this particular person.
Right.
And that was doubly inappropriate. And what we've learned is that it was wrong and it won't happen again. And that I've learned my lesson and that I'm very sorry and I won't ever... I'm not fucking telling you because it's not worth it.
Unfollow.
I swore. Yeah, I was trying not to swear this week, so the F word. I did. Yeah,
you unliked the post.
I unfollowed and basically never the past shall meet again.
How did the date go?
Well, not that great.
Oh, were you on the way to your date? And that
No. So
this was in the past.
You were at the date.
This was in the past.
So this was long in the past, way right. before Chloe was even a twinkle on the landscape. I had gone for a date.
Yeah.
What a particular date with this person, and it obviously didn't go anywhere. It was just it was one date. It was about 20 minutes. It was like a coffee. Again, let alone my terrible chat let me down, and that was it. And then obviously I got the upgrade, which is my lovely wife, and we've never looked back, apart from when I accidentally liked the photo, accidentally on purpose liked the photo. But it wasn't about me, you know. I mean, listen, I'm not going to go into it. We've covered it. I love you, babe. So
you've
it off.
Got to keep Frank the Tank locked up. Social media is very dangerous.
It's a minefield. And the thing is, every day is a school day, and I'm learning. But I tell you what I love about, and I think it's really important, because we talked about the signage and the bits and pieces about clubs adopting, they've got a women's rugby team, is the social media stuff that the women's team has been doing. I loved the interview stuff that I think Emily Scarrett and not sure who else did it.
Natasha Hunt.
Yeah. I thought it was genius. All the stupid questions
the stereotypes.
Yeah, but I think that's amazing because, and I was actually surprised, like the RFU actually put it out because, you know, they were like, oh, the question does everyone always ask you, are you all lesbians?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite ballsy for them, but I think it's great because just there is not the women's game, like you said, when you were playing in 2010 or whatever, is that or when you made your debut, is that you didn't know that people had embraced it.
Yeah.
And obviously what the women's team's achieved is incredible, and the consistency you've achieved, and it should be put out more into the mainstream, but I think ways of accessing it are showing the character of the side, showing the character of the individuals, because if people get to know the individuals, because otherwise if you turn on TV or turn up to a game you might not know, but now with social media there is a chance to
have
see
a voice.
People
do you get frustrated by the stereotypes around the game, and are they do they burn as brightly as they did 10 years ago? Have you noticed it sort of the walls breaking down
definitely. I think there's definitely a massive shift, like just from, you know, people being aware of the women's game and actually taking a judgment on it, not basing it on what they know or have heard.
Yeah.
But I think you're always going to get stereotypes in everything. And it's just that I just don't have any time for it. I just don't waste my time on it. If someone's negative about the women's game, I'm like, well, what's your knowledge on it? Have you actually seen a game?
Mm.
And what's your knowledge on rugby, let alone women playing it? I don't ever get involved in it. And I think in 2012 when we were in Hong Kong, we were walking around the stadium after we won.
I was gonna say you won it that year, didn't you?
Yeah, in like the craziest fashion ever. 10-minute final still, first half, 8 minutes until there was a break in play. 8 minutes.
Bloody
it was brutal against Australia. But anyway, walking around, and that was probably the first time I'd been hearing there was lots of people in crowd going, that was brilliant, that was better than some of the men's game. And just like that was like the beginning of comparison and actually just recognising us as rugby players and that actually that was as good as or better than what we just witnessed beforehand. But there's definitely still people out there.
And are there some of the younger players who suffer at the hands of that? I mean, is everyone as strong mentally as you are about it, or do you know players who find the stereotypes and the social media stuff heavy?
A lot of the young kids have a lot of sass,
really?
And a lot of confidence. Yeah, so I think
so. Actually, it's becoming less of a problem.
Yeah, I don't think they really see it. I don't think they were as subject to it as what kind of my era were.
Yeah,
I remember in France there was one of our wingers, Fran Matthews, was just getting heckled from the side. And like about being a woman and about how she was playing and stuff. And she found that really difficult. But nowadays you don't get that. You don't, well, not experienced it. So it's definitely, it's a different world now.
But it's interesting as well because everything always comes down to money, isn't it? An investment in terms of you know, promoting the game and moving it forward. But I think it's interesting, especially with so much of sports brand shifts and stuff towards sponsoring women and towards the lifestyle element of it, that women's rugby has such potential with some really good investment and actually understand it, that you're encompassing all the things that a lot of women want to achieve, which is fitness, health, competition, and I think, you know, like I remember talking to Under Armour about stuff, you know, they're always talking about wanting to get into women's sports and doing performance elements and things like that. And I think rugby's a great game, but it's just the investment. And I think things like we said, the social media, getting the exposure and having these young players come through. I think it's a good thing having a bit of sass, actually. That's not always good for an older player or for someone like that. You're like, shut up. What are you talking about? But I think it's quite good because that's what will help propel the game. And if you can get a few people that suddenly start getting more of a profile, almost as big as the game, I know sometimes that can have adverse effects, but it actually can be really beneficial because suddenly they'll be known for something outside and start attracting more people to come and watch.
Jess Breach is probably queen of SAS. She's like 20 top tries.
20 tries and seven internationals, which is... Oh, what would you do with a scoring rate like that?
I've not even scored that many ever.
Did she score six in her first
game? Yeah, six on her debut. You're always out of the traps fast in that sort of... Like the Kiwi wingers always score 40 in their first 40 and then drift up. But I mean, 20 in your first seven internationals is outrageous. Yeah. But why is she Queen of SAS? Or Princess of SAS? Because she's young.
She's just got attitude, but she doesn't mean it in a bad way.
Yeah.
It's just so funny. You'll say something to her, she's like, okay. You're like,
really? Okay. Talk to the hand.
But she doesn't mean it like that. She's just quite... knows what she wants, knows how to say it and...
In terms of, I suppose, the contracts now, you're talking about the money coming into the game. There's been so much progress. I just want to ask you, what's your biggest gripe at the moment? If you could change one thing tomorrow in the women's game, what would it be?
God,
I know it's hard to do that because there has been a lot of progress made.
Yeah,
but
I think to build on so much progress would be the more investment in club level.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to contract players either on a part-time or a full-time basis, would be that where the next level would need to go.
Because, was it 28 full-time contracts? How many full-time contracts were given out to England players in January?
28.
And how much of an impact has that had for those players who are now able to devote their lives to it fully?
I think naturally it's going to have a physical impact in terms of being able to train more, recover more. But I think one of the biggest area that people probably don't speak about is just like the stress level.
Yeah.
Of thinking I've got to work, I've got to earn, I've got to do this. And on top of that, I need to do all my training, I need to fit my analysis in, and then I've got to perform.
Yeah.
Whereas that kind of stress and that worry is now gone and players can relax and knowing that they've got a salary coming in by going to train and then sitting down and putting recovery pumps on and chilling out for a couple of hours.
What were you doing? Remind me what you were doing.
I was working for myself. So I own my own rugby academy.
Rachel Werford Rugby Academy. Give him a plug.
What's the website? I was on the website the other day.
Oh, were you? Rachel,
yeah, checking it all out, checking all the testimonials out.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, that's fun research.
I should get you on there, considering you've got one of mine, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, they were having a fight about this earlier.
No, we weren't having a fight.
Yeah, you were. Rachel's disgruntled that...
No, it turns out she wasn't disgruntled, she was just flagging it up.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
So you're getting royalties from it, or... Well, can you explain it?
We can't really get royalties for a quote. Don't start making things complicated, mate.
Yeah, it's true. I'll get you a piece of the action. You're in one of Hask's books.
Yeah, one of your early day books.
Yeah, so it's my rugby fit book, a guide for any young players and people interested in developing rugby, understanding what it takes to be a professional. I've actually reread it and it's not helped me, but it helped me in the early days. And Rachel very kindly reviewed it and we put a quote in it. But... she thought she'd been talking to me, but it was my father, who obviously goes around telling people that he's like my brother or something. But he's an absolute silver fox. I have got a brother who does from time to time.
What's
pop
your brother's
up,
name?
Edward.
Oh no, it wasn't.
No,
Edward.
Jonathan's my dad, and he would have popped out, and he's the old silver fox. And I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? And then I was like, I'm speaking to your brother. I was like, no, you're talking to my elderly father.
Oh,
the old charmer,
still living the dream.
Yeah,
tell me about Rachel Burford Academy.
So I set this up a couple of years ago, and it's basically to run camps for girls, rugby camps.
Yeah.
But it's got a bit of a different twist to it. So we don't just do rugby development. I try and do a little bit of classroom stuff on them on like leadership, communication skills, just kind of building their confidence. So just trying to change it up a little bit. Because I think through my journey, and as I was saying, when I arrived at that first England training, I was like to my dad, are you sure I'm meant to be here? Like quite low on confidence. And I think that's a big area that you don't get taught. You don't get taught how to be a leader or how to communicate. Well, slowly and maybe drip fed, but you never get like real focused attention on it as you're growing up. You kind of fall into these places. I mean, I don't know if you were a young captain growing up and stuff, but when I was in regional, they asked me to be captain, but I didn't really know what that was or what that meant. So trying to help maybe see if there's a little area there that can support girls' development, not just physical and on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Have you noticed a pickup in what you're doing with the academies as the women's game has developed as well? I mean, how much has your business grown off the back of the profile of the women's game and your profile and
Well, it's definitely taken traction. Like, so when I first started, I kind of based myself where I'm from, like down in the south. And then slowly but surely, you know, places from across the country were kind of getting in contact and want me to go there, hearing good things, and had some really, really lovely, you know, testimonials back from parents. And probably one of my best ones was a young girl came along to one. She was in care, yeah, kind of, and she had two carers with her, because they were like, I didn't know she was coming as, and they came up to me and was like, we're here because she's quite a handful, but anything goes wrong, we'll sort it out. And I was like, right, okay, thinking I'm not really equipped to deal with this situation. But she was unbelievable. And I mean, like, helping others out, because she was a big girl, like in terms of like some of the smaller, younger girls, but like helping them along, being really supportive, you know, showing real leadership skills. And it was just the rugby that kind of drawn it out of her. And the carers just blown away. And I got like a 2-page report back from them.
Wow.
And it's kind of that stuff that, you know, if these girls go on and play for England, amazing. Yeah. But to change someone's life, or to at least impact it in such a positive way, is more what it's about for me.
God, that's amazing.
I'm really interested in terms of the, what is the filter system like to get women into rugby? Because I know that a lot of the rugby clubs and stuff I've been to obviously have mixed teams through a long period of time, and they change that, obviously have mixed touch teams. But is there a massive influx of girls wanting to play rugby at the moment? Is that increased with the more your success, or is it still...
Yeah. I'd say so, definitely, yeah. It's you know, you come to our games now and there are so many young girls that are playing or want to get involved. Even just at the semi-final, there was two girls, never come to a rugby game before, and were saying, where could we go and play rugby? So it's happening constantly.
So the final, the Tyrrells Premier final, Tyrrells Premier 15s final was at Franklin's Gardens on Saturday, and all the back pitches had girls playing rugby when I arrived.
It's amazing, that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a proper festival. I don't know if you got to see it.
I only asked because I'm of the kind of generation. I went to boarding school, boys' school, the whole way through.
Yeah,
obviously explains a lot. And my rugby club, when I was at Maidenhead Rugby Club, we didn't have mixed teams, or if we did, we certainly didn't have many. So I've never had that kind of experience of it. So when I've gone back and coached, and when I've supported the women's teams or whatever, you know, I just really interested to know how they do that, because when I've done like book signings or bits and pieces or contacts through social media, I get a lot of female rugby players asking about, you know, about training and about fitness and about health stuff. And it's really interesting, but I never know what the pathway is like and how easy it is for people to get into it.
Well, I think so. Probably like when I was growing up, I was like the only girl. And then the only reason why we had such successful girls teams, because my mum played and my sister played, so my dad kind of engineered that to happen. Whereas you go along to rugby clubs now, there's, you know, 4 or 5 girls in each team. Then now there's even under 11s girls only now, because there's some of them that don't want to carry on playing until they're 12 with the boys. So like for when we were growing up, it to me it was all boys. The only two girls that were playing was me and my sister and my mum, the three.
Yeah.
But now it's not like that at rugby clubs. And the fact that, so the system is still the same, where you get to the age of 12 and then you stop playing with the boys and then you can go into the girls, but you can also go earlier now if you want to. But there used to be a big problem, and it's still a problem now, is that you'll get some clubs that don't have a girls team. So then they get to 12 and then they have to leave a club.
Right. Okay.
And some people don't want to do that. Like, at, you know, 12 years old,
just beginning,
don't know anybody, don't want to move clubs. And then that's where we lose them.
Do you find there's any stigma stuff around women playing rugby? Do you ever get? I mean, I know we talked about you getting criticism, but like young girls, is that ever a thing? Do you ever get people reaching out saying, "Oh, because I still think I'm always interested when I go and coach kids and mixed teams and everything else like that, that they all seem really integrated, but then I sometimes speak to people outside of that and it's like, oh no, I don't, you know, or I don't want to play rugby, or it's not right, or I only wanted to play for it for a bit, just because, well, I don't know. I mean,
I think it just comes back to like opportunities. So right. When you go into schools and you deliver some tag rugby or touch rugby, they're like, oh my God, I love this. But if they'd not ever given that opportunity or seen that it's a path that they can go down, then they're naturally, I think they stay in that kind of stigma of, oh no, girls don't do that, or fine, no, I don't play.
Because also as well with the touch element and stuff, some people don't even want to do contact. That's never a, you know, never a thing.
But I think that's a way that we can accept and allow, like, you know, you don't want to do contact, that's fine. but they're still playing rugby, are still involved. Yeah. And actually then, you know, one day they might have kids and it might be a daughter and she might play. So it's not just, it's got to be this way or that way. If we've got just more people involved, boys, girls, mums, daughters, whatever form.
Hopes for the women's game in the next 4 years. What would you like to see and what progress do you think will come next? What's the next wave and phase?
I think I'd love to see the Tyrrells teams be able to go semi-professional or to some sort of capacity.
Do you think the league has to go through a little bit of pain while some players are professional and others aren't and there's a sort of disparity between the haves and the have-nots in order to get to that point?
Yeah, I do. I think you can't stop still. I don't think we can wait for everyone to kind of get to a point and then I think if we're in a position where the RFU are able to contract players, then we've got to kick on and we've got to keep moving forward. But what this has allowed is, you know, when I was playing at Premiership Rugby before the Tyrrells Premier 15 came in, I was looked after very well because I was with England, so my medical was looked after, my S&C, I had a trainer, I had, you know, nutrition, I had what I needed to in order to keep developing, whereas my clubmate wouldn't have really anything.
Yeah.
And not because of not to want, but the resources and the funding wasn't there. Whereas, you know, all the club players at Quinns, and this is kind of the standards that are set, you know, that there's full medical, there's full S&C, there's extra training available for players to come in, more analysis, like we have a full-time analysis, S&C, medical. And that isn't just for England players, it's for everybody.
Yeah.
So now you're suddenly seeing, you know, my mate Holly Myers, who's only ever been a club player, you know, getting better and stronger and faster and fitter because she's got all of this implemented into her.
What's the S&C stuff like for the women's game in terms of the development stuff? Good?
Yeah. I think it's like anything. If you get a good trainer, you get a good programme. My trainer, Merrick, he's quite, because I'm quite a fine wine, old age, you know. I know my body.
Got to be looked after.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've had to go back and challenge him on a few things, like, that just doesn't work for me, or when I do this, this irritates that. And he's very open to working with me as an individual. But for like the first 2 years, they've had to do quite a lot of very basic and fundamental, just getting players, you know, to do certain movements, to understand their body. And so it's not massively in depth. But then it's kind of, this year it's gone into a little bit more, you know, like powerlifting or something that's suited specifically to front rowers or back rowers.
Because it's very hard, I imagine, to make massive amounts of progress when you were working, you weren't professional all the time. You know what I mean? Because like, exactly like you said, you've got all your confines of your life trying to put, you know, food on the table, pay bills, and then try to indulge in something that you want to. Mm. And then try to be elite at that.
Yeah.
How difficult that must be to be able to do that. And how much, I wonder, because that's one of the things I always look at it now, if I've got some bugbears with the professional game, we've talked about the mental side not being...
Yeah, you've gone there before.
Yeah, correct. I've also got a bugbear that I don't think the conditioning and S&C stuff universally is quite, you know, right or used in the right possible way, or understanding what some players need, what other players don't need, whether it's individualised. And it'd be really interesting to see if you know, like you said, if all those women had that consistent exposure to great nutritional advice. Because even the nutritional advice that the professional players get is still not behind. I'm still amazed at how a lot of boys still don't understand the basics of nutrition, still have no concept, and they're meant to be professional. And the first question anyone ever asks is, so, you know, do you have a specific diet? Do you know, are you allowed to eat that? And the answer is no, you don't. You could literally do what you want. But the point is, that's not optimal. So I wonder with the women's game as well, you know, how much, you know, exposure and how much development there could be in that area. Because that's something I've always wondered, because I knew when it was obviously semi-professional and some people were not, how much advanced you could get. You could probably just get people ready via training just to play a game, but how good athletes could you all be made if you had that constant exposure in that, if the club's invested in that? How, because I think if you're fitter, stronger, better, then the game becomes more of a spectacle with more respect, almost a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I imagine that's where the game is going. It's just a sort of the speed at which he's going to get there.
I think you can't ignore like also the gaps that are happening in terms of international level, where some teams are getting away. Like, yes. I feel that, you know, England have come in and provided contracts, which is going to allow us to kick on even more.
Is the Six Nations less competitive than it was 15 years ago because of that?
I don't think because of that. I think...
But is it less of a fair playing field, level playing field, if you know what I mean?
I think the domestic game in England's always been very good, yeah. Which has then allowed for a stronger performance from England. But it's definitely not been its most competitive in the last 2 years.
England and France, just with more resources. What was it? Tell us about the Six Nations this year. I mean, obviously frustrating for you personally, but brilliant for the team kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good campaign. I think it was quite a surprising campaign against France. Don't think we expected it to result in that at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of a new chapter, looking at some younger players coming through who performed really well and stepped up on the stage. But I think for some of us, we would have wanted it to be closer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like playing in tight games. It always means more when you win them.
Yeah.
As opposed to kind of when games get completely away from you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you still got to be good enough to be able to put that sort of scores against people. So still really proud that we executed really well. And obviously came away with it after last year's horrible heartbreak, yes, in France.
Yes. Is that Jessie Tremoulier? Was it her?
Yes. Yeah, World Player of the Year.
Yeah, I know. That's good night.
You presented.
You get everywhere, don't you? You're unbelievable.
We have very good nights out in Monaco once a year.
You've properly got into the women's game and you made that your niche. You're like Sky with the men's. You're like, that's sort of gone. But you were like, I'll lock that down.
I just like going where the glory is at the moment. That's with the women's.
Following that around. Was it... I think I watched England, Italy this year. Did you absolutely destroy them?
In Stanley Park?
Yeah.
Did we destroy them?
I remember watching...
But it wasn't destroying from the start,
was it?
No, it was
unbelievable try score with some incredible offloads. I remember watching that game and I thought, oh my God, oh my days.
It's as you mentioned the World Rugby Awards. What do you want to do when you retire? Because you are... Are you an RPA representative?
Board member.
Is that the board member?
Sorry about
We're mixing
that.
With the high and mighty.
Well, not even let me anywhere near the board.
They won't let you to the dinner, will they? Yeah. That's pretty much anyone can come to that.
You could maybe you could be T-boy.
T-boy?
Yeah.
Kit man and T-boy. I can take that.
That's a CV for you.
Well, no, what I want to do is me and Dylan Hartley have decided we're going to set up a rival players association that isn't funded by the RFU, and we're just going to be so hard line. It's going to be
picket lines at every game.
Trade unionist Hoppers is. I love Damien Hopley. He's done a great job, but he's out. He's gone. We're going to just take the RPA down. So you can have a place on our board and represent the women. But we're going no RFU funding. We're going to be hard line.
How are you going to fund it?
We'll get a millionaire billionaire backer who wants to do it.
They grow on trees. Yeah.
I promise you, with all the Rugby Norse fans around there, we can find.
If you need a Rugby Norse fan, you need a Rugby Norse.
Yeah, but we get you on to give advice. But that's what we're thinking. We've talked about it before. We're going to just overthrow him because the RPA did an amazing job.
But you can't Game of Thrones this, isn't it?
But you can't argue with someone who partly funds you. So we're going to go in hard. We're like going to be the body that everyone goes to against the RFU. So we're like, absolutely not. You thought 5 weeks was...
So the RFU will say, great, have fun. Yeah. We're going to pick our team from elsewhere.
Yeah, and we'll go, what team? We're all represented by us. They're all playing as a membership.
We'll go down a level.
Well, doesn't matter. We own everyone. We're going to own everyone. Every player.
Every player in England.
So when we come out and go, right...
Have you thought this through, James? Yeah, or is this back of a fag packet drunk at 2 in the morning?
No, so we're going to...
Hask and Dylan are going to rule rugby?
Yeah. So it's essentially what we're going to do is, first we're going to find a backer, but I haven't looked into it.
Right.
But I promise you we could find that because we'll get sponsorship, branding, everything.
Yeah.
We're basically going to have... all the players will be looked after with insurance, financial advice, everything else.
Right.
We're going to have some unbelievable parties paid for with the membership fees. Like for RPA,
free stag to Vegas.
Yeah, RPA give you a water bottle and a pen. We don't have any of that nonsense. And we're going to literally negotiate things so the clubs won't be able to do anything. There'll be no, like, you can have 5 weeks off, but we're going to give you four and you have to come in for one. There'll be none of this 4G shit pitches. There'll be no extended season. There'll be nothing.
Right.
Boys will be getting everything will be locked in. We'll control everything. And I promise you, once we have that, every player won't be able to argue. And Dills and I will be sitting at the top. Obviously.
Seagulls and whiskey.
Yeah, seagulls and whiskey. We'll have a gentleman's club. We'll probably set up a club in London called the Players Club. Nice. And everyone can come in, men and women. And we'll just, you know.
You've lost the one element you had in your favour, the element of surprise, because the RFU will now just.
Well,
they're already building. They're already planning the counter-attack.
They're terrified. The only problem is, Dylan and I have been talking about this for a few years.
Right.
And we actually told Damien Hopley.
How's progress
going? We got him in a headlock and told him we're going to beat him up and take his job. progress is going very much like everything else in my life. Very slow to non-existent to we keep forgetting to do anything about it.
Watch this space.
Yeah. But I think...
Monkey tennis?
Yeah, with Chaz and Dave. Will you come on the board for us?
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, women's rugby.
I do have an interest in like a sort of... So we've got Raylene Castle at the ARU, who's now chief exec down there. Would you like to get involved in the administration side of it, given your knowledge and experience?
Yeah, I think some form of route. Yeah, definitely. I think I just want to keep on being able to try and be a positive impact and keep driving it forward. I think I've been really lucky in my career in the eras that I've come through. I've come from where there was nothing to now full-time professional. Has it got more legs to go? Definitely. And maybe I can help with that.
Judging by your hamstring and your boot, you ain't got a lot of legs to go. You're in the same place.
So we can wheel ourselves around.
I'd stick probably closer to the RPA than Hask and Dill's Mad Society.
No. You've made a cardinal error there, because if we box you out, you won't get any interviews, you won't do anything, we'll control everything.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I'm prepared to run that risk for a little bit. I'm not going to be in the game for that much longer, given the way this is all going, so...
Well, we are the biggest rugby podcast in the world, and actually our viewing figures, thank you very much for everyone who listens and watches. In terms of non-Six Nations game, rugby games, we get more viewers than any other rugby show going. Any other coverage, apart from actual live internationals, don't we?
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's noticeable the amount of abuse has been going up recently.
Has there?
Yeah.
People getting nasty
again.
Keep it light. We started off really nicely.
What, abuse at you guys?
Yeah. So the thing with social media is, and what people don't...
It's quite funny.
What people don't realise is, because you know mad people don't know they're mad. People don't know they're mad. Like, if you're a nasty person... So if you go on online and sign up, for example, to a newspaper... in the comments section, so you log in, create a profile, and you slag someone off. So you slag a woman off for her appearance, you slag a bloke off for this, you slag her off. The people who do that don't know that they're lower than pond scum. They think they're like really relevant, and what they do is they write stuff there, and they think that because they're surrounded by like-minded pond scum, they're all arguing and that life's actually taking notice of it. They're not. Anyone with any intelligence is looking at going, oh dear, if we could press a button and it ended everybody in that comment section's life, the world would instantly be a better place. And then with social media, again, everyone's got an opinion, everyone wants to share it. And people with a brain go, we're going to use common sense, we're going to engage here. But people they get so angry and they just comment and they're like, they write there like, you're a dick, we hate you, thinking that that's going to make any difference. I don't even look at them. I don't give a shit. And if anything, more people who criticise, the more it's going to push me on. It's going to spur me on.
I love it. I love your mental resilience.
That's what they don't realise.
It's been sensitive.
I'm not sensitive. I'm the only sensitive about you mugging me off.
You are a bit sensitive.
That was it. But you know what also, thing with social media, one more thing.
Yeah, please
do. People forget that it is a privilege, not a right. So when people follow you and they share stuff with you, I just block everyone. But I'm so vindictive. This is how it is. If you say something, say you called me Casio, right, and I didn't like that, I'd block you. And all the people who liked your comment, I'd block them too.
I've never extreme. Blocked anybody.
Have you blocked me?
I don't think I was a
tool. No, I didn't do that. No. I unblocked you when you were coming on tonight.
Hashtag
but people think it's a right, but it's not. It's a privilege. So I'm very sorry that people are being negative. Are they coming at you mainly, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. But that's what I'm here for, to deflect from you.
People come at me
I'm
all the time.
Comfortable with it. Yeah. We've got to get us perfect, Paul. It's a new game this week. How are you feeling about that, Rachel? Yeah,
we haven't done it before.
Excited as we are.
I'm
very quickly, we've got House of Rugby Facebook group. I hope there's not too much of abuse on that. Lots of good chat happening on there, says producer Si, every week. And we welcome many new followers who we've had over the last few weeks. So welcome
I've
to
never
all of you.
Been on the Facebook group. Actually, I didn't even know we had it. Why do I not know we've got a Facebook group?
We also need to choose a Guinness Maid of Moore winner for the last month. Player of the last month.
Ignoring you.
Rachel, as the guest, who has been the best player in the women's game over the last month or so?
Oh, you put me on the spot.
Player of the match at the weekend.
Yeah, I know.
She was very good.
She was very good, and she was very good against Wasp as well. Yeah, it's Poppy Cleal, Saracens number 8. She was also in Sky Sports Team of the Week, wasn't she?
She was.
Along with Hannah Botterman.
Yes.
And Zoe Harrison.
Yes.
I've never made Team of the Week.
No, don't you have?
I've never made anyone's team of anything.
No, you have made one or two teams.
I made a few teams, but I never made any team.
The bits and bobs. So on we go to this week's Guinness Perfect Pour. Stand by your beds. Our weekly test in 119 and a half seconds, because that is how long it takes to pour the perfect pint of Guinness. James has been banging on in the WhatsApp group, when he can be bothered to read it, about mixing it up and doing something new and fresh and exciting and unique, he said. So his plan is to steal TKO's perfect pour equivalent with some word association.
No, it was Chloe's idea, actually, because I'm sick to death of doing the teams. We've covered every single team.
We haven't even got going on the teams.
Everyone's done the teams. I don't know what the point of the team was. We were just listing things that made no sense.
Rachel, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Word association. How do you play word association? Is it you say the first thing that comes into your head?
First thing that comes into your head, no pausing.
Okay. Your words, are you ready?
Yep.
You look nervous.
I am.
Are you? Medway.
Home.
Family.
Dad.
Burford Academy. Growing. Maggie Alfonsi.
Nors.
Good old Maggie Alfonsi. We'll get her on one
yes,
week.
Yes, Maggie.
Kendra Coxage.
Legend.
Sevens.
Brutal.
The Black Ferns.
Invincible.
Harlequins.
Sorry?
Harlequins.
Queens.
Captain. Me.
Me.
Hong Kong.
Epic.
Retirement.
Near.
Oh, come on. Cheryl Soon.
Oh, Fierce.
Cheryl Soon.
She was Australian sevens player.
Oh. Emily Scarrett.
Knee pads.
Emily Scarrett.
Don't.
Knee pads. That's what I know. But the reason I told Troy was I used,
the fear
my,
in your eyes.
I used to cut my knees open rambling, so I had to wear them oh, all yeah. through my younger years.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like laughing at it, and I was like, oh no, that's terrible. I definitely is I'm burning all my old photos.
World Cup final.
Amazing.
World Cup winner's medal.
Unforgettable.
Where is it?
Forgotten it.
in my drawer.
World Cup winner's party. Alcoholic.
Can't remember.
Good. Red roses.
Family, too.
Portia Woodman.
Deadly.
A fifth World Cup appearance.
Potential.
The last one, your dad.
Hero.
Quite right, too. He was a good man. Was he the driving force and the...
Yeah.
Can I ask you about that?
Yeah, of course yeah. you can, yeah.
Because he was such a big role in your life, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he was.
And was rugby quite a sort of... Because you lost him, didn't you? And mm-hmm. was rugby quite a big family to lean on at that point? Because did you yeah. do England training the day after or something like that? Or
yeah, after the funeral, yeah.
Yeah.
So we... Obviously, my dad was kind of... Got my mum. My mum's from Poland, so they yeah. met in Poland. He brought her over here, got her into rugby, and then yeah. obviously had us. And just always... You know, I'm sure you got the same stories, would drive you everywhere and everything like that. And then in 2007, when we lost him, it was obviously like the worst thing for our family to go through.
Yeah.
But rugby really did support me in terms of just was there for me. It kept me going because I think I'm not sure what or what because we were going into the Six Nations and it was yeah. a case of kind of. I could have just stayed at home and been really sad, but knowing him and knowing that he'd be like, oh my God, get yourself to training.
Yeah.
You've got a shot to play.
Yeah.
Do not be letting go of that because of me. But the nice thing that he did see me represent England when we were at the 2006 World Cup is on like a tiny little screen, but yeah. he did get to see that, which was really, really special because obviously all the time they spend getting you everywhere and driving that dream for you and you don't really know it's your dream yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, rugby was definitely, so we obviously had the funeral and the next day went to training. And my teammates were like the best thing that I could, were there the whole time, came to the funeral to support me. And there was a couple of really good people around me at that time, Claire Allen being one of them,
yeah.
who would just know when I needed a little bit extra and she was always there. And yeah, it kind of just kept me going and reminded me of why I did what I did. And yeah.
You do get the sense actually with your team, with the England team, that you are a very close bunch. And it is probably much more so than the men, actually, that you are much more sort of almost family kind of thing. Is that, I mean, do you feel that sense now? It certainly is as one of the senior players.
Is yeah, it is. I think, like I was saying earlier, I've gone through a couple of kind of eras and it's always been different. But especially early, all the hard yards that you go through, you know, you're not contracted, you're working full time, you're trying to be professional, you go through all these kind of barriers and these, you know, tough times together, it really does bring you close. And then, you know, yes, I've been to four World Cups, but I've been through three big losses as well. And that brings you together, as you know, tough losses, you learn a lot from it and you regroup. So I think, yeah, it certainly is somewhere where, you know, rugby, I think in any walk, not just in England, like even at Medway, I still feel that that's like my family club. And if I go back there, I'm always open with welcome arms. And And I think that's just the beauty of our sport, is that whatever environment you step into,
yeah,
and different clubs you move to, people always got their arms out and accepting.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. That's quite kind of you. Goes without saying, you know, he'd be extremely proud of you. More chapters still to come as well. I'm not quite sure we did make of your appearance on House of Rugby, but hopefully he'd be proud of that too. Are you ready?
Always.
Hask's words. Away we go. 119.5 seconds. Cassio.
No hands.
Owen Farrell.
Best mate.
Cassio.
Diggers.
Life.
Richie McCaw.
Legend.
Mike Tindall.
Nose.
Sherlock Holmes.
Genius.
Serial killers. Fullback.
Yeah. Serial killers. Bad men.
Red cards.
Shouldn't have had any, but I've had one.
What were you sent off for?
Took off Jamie Roberts' head, didn't I?
They're still trying to find that game.
The 3-1-6 in Richmond, or whatever it is.
Mate, that could have taken out Richmond if that had come off.
Oh my God.
It's sweet.
Rolled into the sand.
Favourite ever England player?
Joe Worsley.
Really?
Did my level 3 with him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Player you look up to.
Player I look up to. Probably.
Say it. Richard. Say the one we all want you to say.
Yeah.
Richard.
Say it.
No.
Lawrence. Bruno. Nero. Delalio.
Yeah.
Richard McCall.
Yeah.
Prince Harry.
Friend.
Eddie Jones.
Legend. I said that already, actually.
Oh, so...
Sorry. Eddie Jones. Mastermind.
Slurring your words on television.
Embarrassing.
Drunk.
Rarely.
Retirement.
Soon.
Favourite other sport.
Women's rugby.
Very good. No. Sir Johnny Wilkinson.
Unbelievable professional.
Ricky Gervais.
Comedy genius.
Married life.
Super fun. I was going to say that.
And House of Rugby.
House of Rugby.
Super fun.
A phenomenon.
A phenomenon. Good. That was your 20. Thoughts on that game relative to team selections? I know our dear viewers will let us know.
I quite like that.
Do you? Okay. Shorter
I was a bit worried I was going to have to do the other one and nobody had told me what it was.
No, yeah. The team.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, the thing is there are many other things you can do. The word association things, we could be more risque with it. That's very tame. You know, we're supposed to be reading...
And it's quite quick.
Yeah.
Your team of the weeks take quite a while, don't they?
They do.
And also, we're going to start reading viewers' comments that I've been asking for. But when we got asked the questions, we actually did it with Vernon Kay. Well, we'll come on to that in a minute. But Vernon Kay, who did it, who stepped in very admirably for Alex.
Very. Very admirable.
Was when they were like, so... Who's your favourite player? Who are you scared? I don't want that. I want the shit that some really interesting people are putting on there.
So next week, we are going to pull out the best YouTube comments left and you're going to respond to them.
Yeah, 100%. But also, the one caveat to that is either we could do it on Facebook, YouTube or wherever. It's ideally I want the profile picture of the person doing it. You only get to qualify for reply if you've got a profile picture, because if it's just an egg...
If you're a Russian bot, we're not giving you the time of day.
But also, if you're just a malevolent arsehole who's put this, who doesn't even have a profile, who just goes around slagging everybody, I want to find someone, I look at them and go, right, let's have a look
this
at you then,
you.
Sir or madam.
So basically what we're saying is the word association game has come and gone in a week.
You can come back.
We can come back.
Yeah.
Let's mix it up.
Yeah.
Variety. It is, yeah. I'm actually happy to have some different suggestions for the teams. The reason is I just felt they weren't going anywhere. It was just listing people.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on the show. What did you make of it?
Loved it.
Did good.
And great to get to know James a lot better.
Yes. And that is what this show is all about, is building bridges. Now you're friends.
Yeah, rugby friends. And I will come down and coach the girls if they want me to. 100%.
Good.
I will keep you to that.
Presumably not the handling, just the breakdown work.
Rude. Yeah. Rude.
Thank you very much for coming on. Please come back again soon. Get well with the foot. Are you done? Are you holidays now? You haven't
got a couple of weeks off.
And then the summer series.
Yeah, then so we've got like a bit of a pre-season, mini pre-season before going out to San Diego.
England.
New Zealand.
France. New Zealand.
France.
USA.
Canada.
Kitman. / team manager.
Definitely not manager. We've got a manager. She'll get upset.
But
you can be kit man.
Why don't she just do the admin bit and I'll just do all the house stuff?
God help us all. Good luck. Go well. Keep doing what you do so well. And thank you for coming on the show. See you soon.
Thank you. That's as good as it gets. You heartless man.
Cheers, Ask. That's it for this week. Thank you for watching. And thank you for listening to House of Rugby. We are a YouTube show and a podcast. Don't forget to download and watch our boxing show, TKO with Carl Frampton and Boys Don't Cry with Russell Kane. Thank you to Ask. Thank you to Rachel Burford. Goodbye. See you next week.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.